Hello and welcome back to Scarity Chats. My name is Justin.
I'm Shayla.
And for all you newbies out here, we're a podcast that recaps and retells scary movies. I missed the punchline. For all you Scarity Chats, we recap scary movies for all the Scarity Cats out there, including us.
Including us. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like I'm becoming less of a Scarity Cat.
Really?
No.
Yeah, I was about to say, how have you been courageous this week?
Well, first I think we need to give an update.
Oh, true. I got a job.
Yeah, okay, wait. So,
and
before we dive right in to our recap and our Courageous Cat moment of this week, we have a,
life announcement.
We have a life update, basically. So, in our last podcast, we talked about the possibility of moving and Justin getting a job, and Justin was all like, no, it's not gonna happen. And I was like, I'm pretty sure it's gonna happen. And what happened?
Yeah, I got the job. I got two jobs, actually.
He got the job. Actually, yeah.
I got two jobs.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you're not working two jobs right
now?
No,
God, no.
But you got two job offers.
Yes.
In Tampa. Mm-hmm. Can we say where we're located?
Yeah. I mean, Tampa's a big place.
Okay. So, Justin
got... Don't come find us.
Justin got a job in Tampa, and we had to move. We had a two-week window to uproot our lives and move
to a whole different city. I told them that I wanted to start on February 10th, and they're like, that sounds great. How about February 3rd? Which was like, I don't even know, 10 days away?
Yeah.
Literally, and they're like, you can be remote, half remote the first week.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, let me just pack up my entire life and move in a week.
This did not, I can't stress enough how stressful this was, because I am in the middle of my qualifying exams for my program, and so this landed right as we got the news that we were moving, the start of my qualifying exams happened.
Yep.
And I basically was like, I had to lose a whole week of not being able to do work because we were in the process of moving.
Yeah.
And that was so, so stressful.
And important to note, your qualifying exam is like basically answer very complex questions, three complex questions of 20-page essays, all like within 8 weeks.
Yeah, so it's you gotta think through it a lot.
Yeah, it's not just like a question and answer, good look at it.
Yeah,
up.
Yeah.
It's
so
very...
It's basically like you're doing a series of essays responding to a question. Mm-hmm. If you're in AP, the DBQs.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's like DBQs, but like times a thousand.
Discussion-based questions.
Oh, nice.
Right?
I could. DBQs. That sounds right.
Yeah. Oh, God. I had forgotten
funny.
About
That's
AP,
the high school
DBQs.
Teacher in you.
But... I don't even think AP Bio had DBQs.
No, they didn't. But like
maybe
in high school space, I don't know.
All I know is that like most of my AP exams, with the exception of like two, I failed. So
that's rough.
DBQs are a little traumatic for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah. I failed
about.
The physics one.
But you know what? There was an English one. I don't know if I told you this story, but I had an English class and the test asked a question about choose a story or a book and then you like respond to it, and I chose Othello, and I was like, oh my gosh, I did amazing, and I ended up failing the test.
No.
Yeah, so that was like,
oh my god,
that is my trauma that's tied to DBQs.
See, but for me, I skipped my English AP exam because...
You told me that.
Yeah, but I didn't tell the world that. Because I'm
the
fancy
world,
and I got a 30 on my ACT.
Those are
humble
brag.
But I didn't have to take... Or I tested out of the English class
You
thing.
Know what? I didn't
people
even
got
take
so mad
my
at me.
ACTs.
That's right. You're
so,
a coastal girl.
And here I am.
Coastal girly with your SATs.
I did bad on my SATs too.
I
genuinely have
time.
No idea how I have somehow ended up as a PhD student.
Well, you've persevered through a lot.
True.
And you work hard.
True, true, true.
You're smart.
But anyways, all that to say, tangent aside, we have moved. We literally moved to a whole new city.
New recording studio.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, I
different
totally forgot
room.
About the stress that was placed on us to find an apartment. We had a whole day that we came, we
oh
drove to Tampa, and that day was supposed to be the day that we found an apartment.
It
and
was disgusting. The worst day ever.
We showed up, it's super gloomy. Justin has to go to
I had to take 2 hours out of the middle of the day to go to the company that I ended up working at.
Yeah, so we had factor in our time. By the time we got to Tampa, it was so close to you going to... Oh, no, we watched... We looked at one apartment, and then by the time we got to Tampa... Or no, we looked at an apartment, and then after we did that, it was time for you to go to your meeting.
Yeah, and the meeting took like 2 hours.
I was just sitting in the car for 2 hours trying to do work.
Oh my god. Because qualifying exam.
Yeah, and then after that, we drove to a new apartment, and then they were like, oh, there's no more...
We don't... Yeah.
There's no more tours for today.
That was also the one where they're like, we don't accept offer letters as proof of payment.
Exactly.
And I'm
exactly.
like, well, fine, screw you.
So, and taking we actually really liked that
to
one.
To a different place.
And we ended up calling a different apartment, and they were like, we're all booked for tours for today, but we can do tomorrow. And we were just like, hey, we're not in town, so today is kind of our last day.
Yeah.
But what did we end up having to do?
We had to come back
the next day.
The first and second of our ended up being tens of trips to Tampa, to Gainesville and back and back and back.
The number of trips we've taken. But anyway, so then we showed up to Tampa. We looked at one apartment. We really liked it. And we had probably like six other apartments to look at.
Yeah, first one we saw the day. We're like, oh, this is better than we
thought. Yeah, and so, but I had my eye on two of them. And I was like, these look really good from these pictures. These photographs, like whoever took these pictures
needs a raise.
Did an amazing job, because when we actually went to the apartment, nothing, not give it. It was just like completely different from the photos.
Yeah, and just way more, a lot more dinge.
Yeah, like super crusty. Yeah. It smelled terrible in a lot of them. So we ended up going with the first one we saw.
Yeah, so we could have saved ourselves.
Yes, that's the part so that makes me so frustrated, is we spent so much time in Tampa. We were so exhausted by the time we came back. And we literally just chose the first apartment.
Yeah.
Oh, and when we actually went to apply for it, the actual unit that we saw that we wanted was taken already.
Yeah, but like we tried to apply that night.
Yeah, and so
it was already taken.
And apparently there were other people that were trying to apply for this unit as well. Yeah. So we like
it
barely,
was a race.
Yeah,
although,
we barely
like,
made it.
Maybe the Lord was on our side, because we're on the second floor, and if the other apartment we wanted is a third floor apartment, and there's no elevators, so getting all of our things up that one flight of stairs.
God. Okay, yes. Because, so I actually forgot to mention the actual move.
Yeah.
So my parents' plan was to come up and help us move, and like 2 or 3 days before we were actually going to move, they got super sick.
Super sick.
So they weren't able to move. At this point, we're like,
it's just the two of us.
I am not strong enough.
And I am one person.
Yes, I am not strong enough to carry things like a box, let alone an entire couch, a TV, a bunch of other things. So I was like panicking, what the heck do we do? And so we thought about calling movers, but these movers...
$2,500.
So expensive.
I don't have $2,500, I'm sorry.
So expensive.
Join our Patreon and maybe we can get movers next week.
Join our Patreon, buy our merch. I wonder what merch we'd put out. Maybe like stuffed cats.
Oh, that'd be cute.
Well, not like an actual stuffed cat, like a smile movie. Yeah.
But, we stuff like cats animal. In boxes. Yeah. Definitely just get your... It's like a prank gift you can get someone. Send them a dead cat in a box.
That okay, that's not okay.
Get your scaredy cats here. Okay. Get your scaredy cats. Okay, fine.
But we called the movers, they were too expensive. They just kept bothering me. They would text me every day, they would call me every
desperate.
Day. That guy, oh my gosh, you were on the phone with him for like 20-30 minutes.
Yeah.
He just kept telling you, but man, this is what we do in this service, and we know how to wrap your TVs, and we know how to take your mattresses, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So the level of stress that I had in that moment was too much, but I started asking around, and one of my friends knew someone in Tampa that would be able to help us like unload the U-Haul.
Shout out, Blake.
Thank you so much. If you are listening to this, we appreciate you so much.
Every time I sit on this couch, I couldn't have gotten up here on my own.
But we, so we had someone to unload the U-Haul, but we didn't actually think about the fact that
we had to put the crap in the U-Haul.
So the night before, we decided, for whatever reason on earth, to actually drive to Tampa to pick up our keys the day before. Totally not
big
necessary.
Mistake. Huge.
Not necessary at all, because the
we
only thing
we
did...
We just wanted to see the apartment.
No, I wanted to fumigate the apartment. That's the only reason I came, to get the little, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Act defense, defense raid,
it
whatever.
It seemed like it was a scam.
And just, like, fumigate the whole apartment. But anyway, so we did that. We took 2 hours to get here at 4. We were here for about an hour. Mm-hmm. We left. We were in traffic for about an hour worth of traffic. So we didn't get back to Gainesville till like 7 or 8:30.
Yeah. Already exhausted.
Yes.
And now it's like, okay, time to pack the truck.
So we had a couple boxes ready. And then we also had things that we still hadn't put into boxes. Now, if you know me, you know that I like to organize my things by like separate categories when I have the opportunity to do so.
And if you know me, I can't do that.
Yes. And so when I was making boxes, I was like, this box is for books, this one's for games, this one is for my clothes, this one's for my shoes, etc., etc. And Justin, on the other hand, is like, let me throw this moldy Pyrex into this plastic trash bag.
That was a different circumstance, and that's not fair.
But that reflects what you're doing.
Okay, fair, but that's a mean example.
So, because that's like the epitome.
You're leaving out a lot of context there.
But true story, you really did that.
I did put a moldy thing of Pyrex in a garbage can and then put it in the shed to heat up and then basically start a mold culture. So,
oh my
God. I'm sorry.
So... But I was panicking. At a certain point, I was like, I have to surrender to this messy disaster. So we started putting things in boxes. We don't even know what we put. I was trying to have some kind of system as best as I could, but it was not working.
We just needed to get stuff on the truck and the truck to here.
So Justin tells me, you finish packing the boxes and I will go and load the U-Haul. And immediately I was skeptical. Immediately I knew no. Because if you know Justin, you know that Justin is like maybe good at Tetris on the phone. But in real life, when it comes to like fitting things in different places.
Ain't no way.
Horrible. You're so bad at it.
But I think the thing that makes it the worst is I feel when I'm doing it like I'm doing so good.
Yes, and that's what upsets me because I don't know how to tell you, please stop doing this because you suck at it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm big enough to admit that.
So I go outside and this man has a bunch of boxes that he's taken out and has just randomly placed them in the U-Haul. There was no order to them. You know, like when you put boxes, you want to make like the same size so that they all line up and stuff. No, absolutely not. There was a medium box. There was a large box. There was a small box, another medium box, all in a line. And this is when I knew, oh my God, this night is going to take a while. So we took everything out.
Yeah.
We started loading things. I was saying, okay, bring this, bring that, bring this. And it was like a game of Tetris. I was literally trying to look at every nook and cranny in that U-Haul and trying to figure out.
Because we needed every nook and cranny.
Yes, we had a large U-Haul and we still, mind you, we were like packing up a 3-bedroom house.
Yeah.
For an apartment. So we were trying our hardest to like get rid of things and also to like fit things in the U-Haul. And that just was not happening whatsoever.
No. It was, I don't even know. But maybe we could have done it. Not on that time scale.
No, absolutely not.
We were so rushed.
It ended up being 6 a.m. and we still
weren't done.
At that point, we were like, we have to go to bed.
Yeah.
So we went to bed.
Because I needed to drive that U-Haul tomorrow.
And I needed to drive the dogs.
True. You're driving the dogs alone.
God, but
what a nightmare.
We went to bed. We said we were going to wake up super early. We did not. Mm-mm. We ended up not leaving until like 2 p.m. when our plan was to leave at 7 in the morning.
So not getting to get to Tampa until like 4:30.
And it was a disaster. One thing I forgot to mention, because the whole reason I brought up that I was weak, is that we had to load large things.
Yeah.
And you had a dolly? Mm-hmm. That dolly was useless, basically, for like these things, because
it was helpful going into the truck. Unloading, no.
When it came to our larger couch, I was like, there's no way on earth that I can take this up the U-Haul. I was like, Justin, have some sympathy for me.
Yeah, well.
Because I am tiny. Look at my little noodle arms.
I did have a lot of sympathy for you.
And so we're carrying this couch up the U-Haul, and we have it like on a dolly, like half on the dolly, half off the dolly.
But this is a big couch and a small dolly.
I'm like losing my grip of this couch and I start to feel the couch go sideways, and from 1 second to the next the couch just
boom.
flips onto, like, half the couch is on the grass concrete.
Yeah.
The other half is still on the U-Haul ramp. And I look at the leg of the couch, and it's just completely bent. And I'm like, there's no way this couch just got messed up. Thankfully, it didn't.
Yeah, we just had to, like, rebend it.
Yes.
The middle leg.
But that was, like, anyways, all that to say, that was the stress of moving.
I don't even, like, feel like I've processed all of that.
No, me neither. I think it's, like, straight up trauma.
Yeah.
Like, I'm holding this trauma in my body.
Yeah, that was so horrible.
It was atrocious. But here we are, and
living
we're
around
excited.
Boxes. And, yeah.
And then our other update is that we're actually engaged. And that's exciting. That's fun.
Yeah. Not as fun as moving, but...
Yeah, not as fun of a story as moving, but we're engaged and we're happy to... I don't know if you're happy.
The trail
off. You don't look like you're happy right now.
Well, I am nonplussed, obviously.
Oh my god, I learned that word in my English class! Nonplussed, yes. Shout out Mr. Jones. You were a great teacher. I'm sorry I failed your AP exam.
That's his fault.
But, anyways, so...
What movie are we talking about?
Today,
yeah.
This episode, we are going to recap...
Taylor, you're getting a call.
We are... Oh, we are going to be recapping Saw, whatever year this was.
2004.
Saw 2004.
James Wan, 2004. The creator of also, we may have heard of this, Insidious, our first episode, and
really?
The Conjuring.
No way.
James Wan.
I don't think I'm ready to do The Conjuring.
We should do a podcast of, like, just the James Wan-iverse and just all of his movies.
Yeah.
Because, dang, they're fun.
So why did we pick Saw for this one? I know we mentioned it in our last episode.
Mm-hmm. For me, Saw...
Me?
Listen, I'm going through third puberty. I think we picked Saw because it's we love the franchise.
Yes!
Really love
yes!
the franchise. And we just want to, like, we got to start from the beginning.
Yes.
I think Saw for me was one of the first horror movies where I was having fun.
Did you watch that with me?
Yes, for the first time
okay.
I watched it with you.
Okay. Wow, mm-hmm. What an experience.
Yeah.
What I would give to watch Saw for the first time again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's...
The twist and everything. Yeah. Super good.
Beautiful.
We're in for a treat. I am so excited to be talking about it.
I am so excited to recap this movie. This is one of my favorite movies. Like, I love Scream, but Saw sometimes, like, really, really does a good job of being up there.
I'm curious when talking about it, like, to try and get a little more understanding of why is it so good? Because it's so cheesy and so bad, but it's so good.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Like, especially because it's 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. So, like, I watched this movie when I was relatively young, and...
Yeah,
I
just a reminder for everyone to say how young.
I was probably, at this point, 2004, at this point I was either, like, late elementary school or middle school
yes.
when I watched Saw.
So, 9.
Yeah.
10 years old.
But,
like, I feel like when people think young, you think, like, you know, 13, something. No.
So, I love Saw so much because I think just the premise of it is, like, I don't know. I think it's very intriguing. It, like, plays on, like, your emotions. And,
it's,
like, we'll talk a little bit more about that.
But it is kind of horror in a way that I feel like where it's, like, self-inflicted.
Mm.
Like, it's not a bad guy chasing you. It's your...
It's very psychological also. Like, there's that component to it.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into it, let's talk about our courageous cat moment of this week.
Oh, yeah.
This past week, my parents came into town to help us out, unpack, which... Amazing.
Thank you,
Mom and Dad, for that, because that was...
Mm-hmm. Love you speaking to them in English right
amazing.
Now.
Amazing. Yeah, because they're not listening to the podcast.
Yeah, they don't.
I was with my mom, and we had gone to, like, buy a couple things, and it was, like, pretty late already, and we didn't have food, we didn't want to make dinner, so we decided to stop by at a restaurant. And it was this restaurant that served Guatemalan food, and we were, like, super excited to get food there. They had a bunch of different, like, chips and candies and whatever, and so we immediately were like, oh my god! We grabbed two things. And we went to the register, and I'm here looking for a menu, and I don't see a menu. I'm like, where is the menu? So this lady comes out, and she just seems like she does not care about her job, to be honest. But we ask her, like, hey, do you have a menu? She shows us the menu. We're looking at the prices, and they're more or less, like, kind of fine. Like, a pupusa was $3, yeah. So, like, it's normal price. So my mom starts ordering things. She's like, okay, then she asked for the two items we grabbed, and then we also got like these little ice cream. I don't even know how to explain them. They're like in a bag. And she tells us that the total is $90-something. And when she said this, my heart dropped. I was like, I know we got a lot of things, but like, there's no way on earth it's $90 worth of things. Like, we have gone out to eat at like nice restaurants, and it hasn't been $90.
No. And what we got, like, 6 pupusas total?
Yeah, like my mom got like a couple some extra things. Stuff, yeah. But... So I look at the receipt and I'm here like super skeptical. And I was like, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything. But I was courageous and I nudged my mom.
And I. You didn't tell me that.
I was like, does that look good to you? And she's like, and I'm like, how much was this? And we're trying to, like, do the math there. And the lady, like, very clearly is annoyed. She ends up saying that there was, like, taxes added and this and that. So, obviously, we ended up not complaining. But a past version of me would have just not said anything at all. Even though I didn't say, like, what on earth happened? How did this total up to $90? I feel like it was improvement.
Listen,
it was,
progress isn't linear.
It's not.
And it's also, or rather, it's not binary. It's not going to be like you're not courageous, then you're courageous. It's a step.
Yeah.
I think that's actually
very... No, I was courageous.
I'm proud of you.
Yes.
And that was very funny telling of that.
Anyway, so what... Tell me about your moment.
Oh, okay. My moment was at the thrift store 2 days ago when we got this. New fancy new coffee table.
Yeah.
It lifts up. $10. Amazing.
Oh my gosh. Yes, yes, yes. I love our coffee table. Shout out Flamingo.
Yeah. It's not Flamingo. It's Red, White, and Blue Thrift Store. So we were going to ask, and like, okay, there's a sticker on the table, and I'm not about to bring this entire ass table to the line. All right. And so I was like asking the person, like, okay, do we just take the sticker? How do we get it like out? Whatever. And then the lady's like, no English to me. And I was like, oh, okay. And I paused and I was like, about to say, okay, thanks, I'll go bother someone else. But then I was like, no, can we take the table up to the front, or should we just take the little, the papelito, the little sticker, is what I called it. So, and she's like, oh, no, 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 very quick mistake, the papelito. And then she's like, someone will come in with a dolly and take
it out.
So
you said that in Spanish.
I did. Lord knows I'm not going to say it on the podcast.
I was going to say, listen, you tell me what you sound like?
Again, progress isn't linear.
So, like, during that moment, I was just, like, shopping around, and I sent Justin, because I was not being courageous, so I sent Justin to ask, and when he came back and told me that, I was shocked. I was shocked, because I know that you...
I think it's super
you understand
anxious.
Spanish, like, really well.
Yeah.
But then you get, like, more anxious when you have to speak it.
I just don't know the grammar.
It doesn't matter. I don't know the grammar either. I just go by vibes.
Yeah, but you have way more vibes to base it off of. You were raised on the vibes.
But anyways, let's dive right. You know, we just have a lot of life updates.
That's right. That's like, what people come to the podcast for, to be honest.
I know you're so interested in our life.
Yeah.
But we, you know what? We can't separate this podcast from our identities and who we are.
All right, scholar.
The movie opens up with these barbed wires. And it says, Twisted Pictures.
Yeah.
Very 2004. Very, like...
That was cutting edge animation.
Like, not... Like, super pixelated.
Yeah. But that was cutting edge.
But the thing is,
it was still, like, that super low budget movie.
Yeah.
By the way. Like, this movie was $1.2 million budget.
That's a lot. But not that much for a movie. Yeah.
But grossed $100 million.
Crazy. I really do wonder, like you said, what is it about that movie that's like addicting?
It caught it.
Because I've watched this movie probably like 6 times by now.
And if we had it on right now, I would still watch
it. I would never get tired of it. And I haven't finished watching the whole Saw series. I definitely want to.
We're working our way through, yeah.
So the movie starts with a guy waking up inside of a tub. This tub is super rinky,
gross.
Dinky.
Not even dinky, it's just disgusting, yeah.
Disgusting. Looks like there's mold growing from the side. Like,
it's really bad.
Black mold.
Well, it's also super dark still.
Yeah.
Right. And he goes, oh shit, I'm probably dead. The first of many.
The first thing I wrote is his voice is annoying.
I said, why is his voice so high? Yeah, the first of many little comic book level quips that Adam does.
Yes. So he is confused. The lights come on. Mm-hmm. So he's chained by his ankle. You look around the room. There is a dead body in the middle of the room. There's blood coming out of his head.
Yeah.
And he's wearing boxers.
And he has a gun in his right hand.
Yes. And a cassette tape.
Cassette player.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cassette player. To me, it's all the same.
Yeah, anything before 2000.
But as he's looking around, we are introduced to Lawrence Gordon, doctor.
Yeah.
MD.
Sweaty man.
Yes.
He's in a collared shirt. Sweat down his chest.
I literally
sweat
wrote that.
All the way down his armpits. Like, it's either 100 degrees in there or he's just the sweatiest man alive.
I wrote that. Doctor is wearing blue collar up, sweating. Because he was drenched in sweat. If you can imagine, this is this, like, middle-aged white man. Mm-hmm. Piercing blue eyes. Yeah. Blonde hair. Mm-hmm. Like, literally picture a blue collar shirt. What you picture when you hear blue collar shirt, that's what he was wearing. And it was just, picture it being dunked in water.
Yeah.
And coming out, that's what he looked like. So Mr. Gordon is sitting on
Doctor.
Gordon. So sorry. Put some respect on it. Mm-hmm. So he is sitting.
His ankle is chained, like handcuffed. Ankle cuffed to a pipe.
Ankle cuffed. So we are introduced to Dr. Lawrence Gordon. So as Adam and Dr. Gordon are
figuring
super
stuff
confused,
out,
just meeting each
no
other.
No one is taking your kidneys.
It's like, so you have Adam who is like, we didn't really describe what he looked like, but he's just like kind of
squirrely
slim.
Energy.
Yeah, like has dark hair.
Yeah.
Kind of just like, slightly long, not really long. I don't know how to explain it. Not a great haircut.
He's not paying a lot for his haircuts.
Who's that actor? Because I feel like that's
he's actually
way to
one of the co-writers
of the movie.
Uh huh.
Damn, Adam Faulkner. Anyway, so
Lee Wannell is the actor. I mean the writer and actor for Adam.
No, it's
Adam is the character.
Oh. That's his name.
Very funny.
That interaction is just like, you have this guy who is supposed to be like your traditional funny guy trope. Mm-hmm. And then you have Dr. Gordon.
Yeah.
Who is leading this conversation.
Yeah, is being kind of weird.
Yeah.
If I'm honest.
He's like, he's just answering this like he's done this before.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, he just knows he's all the questions
so,
Adam's
yeah,
gonna ask.
Yeah, so chill. Be like, don't you see? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
like,
the perfect
when
example.
When I was watching it, I was thinking like I was sus of the doctor at first because it's like, why do you know all this? Why are you like leading the conversation?
How could you not be suspicious of him?
Yeah.
Because he was acting like he knew more than he was leading on.
Yes.
But anyway, so they're looking around the room. He's like basically telling him like, come look with me, whatever. Mm-hmm. Oh, something that's important to note is they're on opposite ends of this room.
Yeah, they're like probably
opposite
15
corners.
Feet in between them if they were both reaching towards each other.
Yes, and then the dead bodies in between.
Because they can't get away from their walls.
So as they're looking around, obviously still chained to these pipes, they see a clock.
The clock looked nice. And they're like, anyone who put that there wanted us to know the time.
Yeah. Okay.
So they're trying to like piece together like what's going on. Eventually, Adam finds something in his pocket, which is just a little audio tape that says play me.
Yeah.
And so now they're like, this is the first clue in the escape room, basically, which this would be such a fun place to be if your life wasn't in danger.
The doctor also finds something, and that's a bullet and a key.
Yeah.
With also a cassette that said play me.
Yes. So of course they try the key on the cuffs.
Yes, which is so
dumb. As if they would just be like, oh man, you figured it out.
Exactly. First of all, this key, it looks like when you buy a lock for your luggage, that little tiny fancy key.
For the gigantic.
And the cuff is like
it's
huge.
It's thick, dense metal.
In what world is that tiny little key going to unlock your ankle? And also, it's not going to be that easy.
I could understand if you're cuffed to a pipe and you're given any key,
I guess you would try.
Why wouldn't you try?
You would try. Anyways, yeah. So but they're looking around.
Yeah, they're throwing stuff back and forth to each other also, this key and the tapes and everything. And I just wanted to comment that these are the two least coordinated men alive.
They're trying their best. They're,
just throw it underhand.
They're throwing it
like baseball.
It was like their time. They wanted to get scouted.
Yeah.
But anyways,
they were so bad.
They notice that the body in the middle of the room has a cassette. And they're trying to figure out a way to reach the cassette.
Mm-hmm.
So as they're doing this, like, first of all, their first thought is to just reach it with their hands. And I'm like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You're clearly super far away from
this guy.
This
has been designed.
Exactly. The second thing I thought was, like, I would be pretty damn good at this. I feel like I would be... Like,
I think we would do great.
So, eventually one of them, I think it was Dr. Gordon, told Adam... Because Adam was closer to him. The cassette was on the dead bodies.
The body was pointed more towards Adam.
Yeah. So, Adam gets his sweat. He was wearing, like, this little plaid
flannel
type of thing.
Yeah.
And he uses that to try to reach the cassette.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't work out. And so he goes and he ends up grabbing this like tub string thing, attaching it to the sweater flannel, and then finally is able to retrieve the cassette.
Yeah.
So of course they play their cassette tape. Adam goes first, and his has to do with, they mention voyeurs. They mention that he's pathetic and he lives in the shadows.
Up until now, you've simply sat in the shadows watching others live. Basically calling him pathetic, and then gives him the impetus of, like, are you going to watch yourself die today, Adam, or are you going to do something about it?
Exactly. As this was happening, I noticed in the background that there's a heart on the toilet.
And first, you saw that?
Yeah, and first I was like, that's random.
It's also a heart in, like, poop.
Yeah. I was thinking of it as, like, dirt, but maybe it was poop.
Come on, no.
So they pass the cassette tape, and the doctor hears his cassette tape, and his is basically delivering bad news, and that is that he has until 6 p.m. to kill Adam.
Mm-hmm.
If he does not kill Adam, Allison and Diana, which are his wife and daughter, will die.
Yeah, really quick. 2004, there's two females named Allison and Diana. Who was the mother? Who was the daughter?
Dude, I had that same thought, because when I heard that, I thought Allison was the daughter and Diana was the
mother. Put a pin in
that.
We'll come back to that.
That was my thought.
Mm-hmm.
That was my thought.
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
But anyways, the other thing that the cassette says is X marks the spot.
Follow your heart.
Follow your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it says X marks the spot,
and then the cassette ends. Yeah. And then for some reason, Gordon like listens to it again. And then
Gordon
like,
has like supersonic hearing powers apparently, because this tiny little bit of a whisper that says follow your heart, he was able to pick up, which I didn't hear that at all. But anyways, when I heard follow your heart, I was like, oh no,
the
toilet,
yeah.
The freaking toilet. So of course they figure that out, and Adam goes, and his first instinct is to go to the toilet bowl and
Adam
to stick his hand in it.
Because the toilet bowl is within his reach.
I cannot begin to describe how dirty this toilet bowl is. It's not like when you leave your toilet and haven't cleaned it and there's a little rim of like mold.
No, it is actively clogged with fecal matter.
It is literally filled with brown liquid that I refuse to believe what it is. And the toilet seat also is like filthy.
Yes.
And he sticks his hand in there.
He's like digging it out like he's digging out a sandcastle.
Which right now, I'm kind of just thinking about something later on in the movie, but whatever. So he sticks his hand in there. He doesn't find anything.
Oh, I think I know what you're thinking about. Are you thinking about the cigarette he smokes?
Yeah. And so Dr. Gordon is like, check the tank. And he goes, and inside the tank, there was this black plastic bag. And so he's like, well, I should have checked in there first. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Of course,
you put this guy to dig through a nasty toilet when I saw that, I was like, dude, my first instinct would have been to first look at the toilet tank.
Yeah.
And even then, I'd rather die than to stick my hand inside the nasty
thing.
I would be dying as I actively did that.
Exactly. And then inside of the bag, Adam finds two saws. Little kind of dinky, but saws. And so, of course, what do they think about it? But then to try and just saw their chains as if it would be that easy.
That just was not going to happen because those chains were made out of like what, metal? Like really, really sturdy.
Probably
like steel.
Yeah, they could have been steel and like they could have trolled them and gotten like some
and
dinky
they were
little,
thick. Yeah. They were super duper thick and those saws were very
thin.
Flimsy.
Yeah.
So this doesn't work. And of course, Adam gets mad and he grabs his saw. He throws it to this mirror and a bunch of shards fall. This is when the doctor realizes that he doesn't want them to saw through the
metal. Saw through a different part of them. Something else to get them through the chain.
And then that's when the doctor realizes that they actually want whoever's doing this wants them to cut off their foot.
Yeah.
And not the chain. Mm-hmm. So this is when you start to see flashbacks. They put these flashbacks throughout the entire movie.
Most random.
Yes. Times. And so like it's easy to follow along, but when I was writing it down, I was like, "Wait, what's going on here?"
Yeah.
So I forgot to mention we started part 2 of the movie. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Gordon starts to tell the story of him and the story of him being a suspect, and he's kind of saying he thinks he knows who did this.
Yeah.
We go into a flashback where we see these policemen come into this room that is filled with razor wire. And I had goosebumps on my butt.
Yeah, not just razor wire, but a body in
it. Like a body in it, exactly. Yeah. And so the cassette tape for this man that is in there, obviously dead, had something to do along the lines of him slicing his wrist. And so the game that he was put through was that he had to climb through razor wire within 2 hours to be able to escape.
To cut himself to survive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if he didn't do that, then
He was going to die.
Well, was it like he was going to be trapped there forever?
Yeah, there was going to be a gas that went off, I think. Or the door would lock and a gas.
Yeah. This was actually my scaredy cat moment of the movie.
Really?
Yes. Because I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because when I watched this part, something about razor blades just like scare me so much.
I get you.
Like, I don't know how to explain it. It just gives me, goosebumps. Like, it literally gives me goosebumps like as that, I'm talking about it.
Yeah.
Just the thought of, like, holding a razor blade in my hand for whatever reason.
It's like,
you know how people don't like nails on a chalkboard?
Yeah, okay.
It's my equivalent of that.
I get you.
Like, just looking at a razor blade is my equivalent of that. Mm-hmm.
I think when we think about it in larger context of why I saw is so interesting, that kind of setup is very affecting. Of, like, this person has to harm themselves to get out. And just, like, seeing them being frantic and doing that is horrifying.
Yeah, and we end up learning that this is kind of, like, this theme throughout where the cassette tapes that the victims receive have to do with their lives and something that whoever's doing this perceives to be wrong.
Yeah.
And they get to be put into this game where they can right their wrong and do that as a way to survive.
Yeah. So it's clear the victims are picked by how they are in life.
So we go back to the doctor talking and he's narrating the story. And then we have another flashback of the next crime. Mm-hmm. This crime is this guy named Mark. And apparently Mark was kind of conning people saying that he was sick.
Yeah.
And getting people's money from it. So his challenge or whatever was there was a bunch of combinations on the wall. He had to guess the combinations. And to be able to do that, he had to step on glass, shards of glass.
That one was pretty convoluted.
That one was confusing because
he had a nerve agent.
Yes.
Was flammable, like coated in flammable wax stuff, holding a candle in dim light to walk on broken glass to read combinations on the wall. To then open a safe.
This person really wanted him to die.
Yeah.
Basically.
No chance.
Because, it was like, you have to do this and this and this and this. By the way, also, you can, like, totally catch on fire.
Yeah.
So, that was something.
Yeah.
So, as they're telling this story, the doctor, again, has this flashback. And this is of him in his job, in his element. He's teaching this group of students. Mm-hmm. It's very Grey's Anatomy type.
Derek Shepherd.
Yes.
The first thing it says
is
like,
a neurologist?
Yeah. Well, I mean, They said that this is a
brain tumor.
It was like bone cancer that metastasized to the frontal lobe.
Of the brain.
Yeah, so that's where he's like very different. Derek Shepherd.
Yeah, so he's instructing his students about this patient, and this janitor comes in. And this janitor, I just want to say his hair is way too dark for his skin tone. It is like the darkest black you can think of.
It's also that like early 2000s spiky hair.
Yeah. It does not help him at all. But this janitor is very clearly trying to be creepy.
He's weird. Yeah,
that's how they're portraying him, is to be weird. Weirdo, creepy.
The guy's name is Zep.
Zep, exactly.
Zep talks about the cancer patient.
Yeah.
And like tells a little bit about his story. He's like, oh, he's a nice guy or whatever. Like in the middle, interrupting Dr. Gordon's description of the patient, basically.
Yeah. That was Zep the Weirdo. Mm-hmm. But anyways, the police come in and they start to question the doctor. He's saying, I didn't do this. They tell him, hey, we found your light. And he's like, or whatever it's called, your little, those pen light things that doctors have.
Yeah.
He's like, we found this at the scene of the crime.
Has your prints.
And he's like, that was not me. And he reveals his alibi to his lawyer, which was that he was with a person. Mm-hmm. And not just like in a business meeting sense. He was having an affair.
An affair with?
With. We don't know yet.
We don't know yet who. We saw some Meredith Grey, Derek Shepherd interactions.
I had my suspicions.
There was looks exchanged.
I had my suspicions about some of those students there, particularly one. Mm-hmm. But we don't know yet, so it's all speculation.
Yep.
So in this flashback, we then see a victim that was actually able to escape. She gets brought into the police precinct, and she was one of this person's victims. Do they mention his name already?
No, they did.
Because
he cuts a jigsaw piece out of the body. Which.
So she escaped Jigsaw. Mm-hmm. And she's telling her story. We go into a flashback of a flashback.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
This is like meta
flashback,
super flashback, flashback, flashback inception. Mm-hmm. But in her flashback, she is retelling what her like game thing that she had to do.
Yeah.
So do you want to explain this whole contraption that was on her?
Yes, because this one is also going to be my scaredy chat moment.
Oh, yes. I can see that.
Mouth pain for me is a whole level of, like, awful.
It's the jaw pain for me.
Yeah, exactly. So she wakes up and tastes blood and metal in her mouth. And then we kind of zoom out and we see that she's got this giant contraption, just metal, gross contraption, like locked in her head. She eventually like wakes up, starts scrambling, and then the tape starts playing.
So we actually end up seeing Jigsaw.
Yes, that's what it is.
We see Jigsaw, and can I just say,
cutie.
Jigsaw's cheek fillers. I think it's inspiration for a lot of people out there.
It started a trend.
It's very like, his cheekbones are just very like,
yeah,
protruded.
Snatched.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the right word.
I don't know either. Snatched and swirled.
But yeah, we end up seeing Jigsaw come out, and her cassette tape basically plays, but in this case, it's a video.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's why I got confused.
And in the video, they show her the exact same contraption and refer to it as a reverse bear trap.
Yeah.
Where, essentially, think about this part of the contraption is like kind of connected to the top part of her mouth, and the other part is on the bottom.
Yes.
And whenever the timer ends, or whenever she runs out of time, that thing is going to like completely pop open, which is going to like
just rip her head apart
essentially.
And,
yeah.
And the worst part is they show in the video, they demonstrate it working to her.
Yes.
By having it explode a dummy while it's on her head.
I don't know if we are properly communicating how terrible this is, because like, just think about if you were to grab your hand and put it in the top of your mouth and grab your other hand and put it on the bottom.
Yeah.
And try to like open your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about like something doing that to the point where it completely just rips your head
apart. Yeah. Just like Yeah, it makes your head just
yes
pink mist.
It is like I can't communicate enough how bad this thing has force. This is.
Yeah,
it's bad.
Yeah, so that see her seeing the trap go off was my scaredy cat moment.
Because she's panicked.
Yeah, that was just like, and they kept making the camera shake and like having it be super panicky.
Oh yeah.
That was very funny.
These visuals.
They would like make it go like, fast forward.
It was like fast forward spinning around. All over her, swapping up and down.
Super cheesy, but super fun.
This is what her objective was. She had a key that she needed to release this bear trap out of her head. The cassette says that the key is in the stomach of her dead cellmate. She is like shaking, turning, and ends up finally being able to like release her arms from this chair that she was in. When she gets up, you can hear like this click happen, which ends up panning to a timer that's like 60 seconds.
The timer is started. Not
a lot of time.
A lot of time.
So at this point, she's panicking. Again, the camera is just like picture a little kid with a camera just shaking the crap out of it.
Yeah, a kid on like moving so around. Much coffee ever just trying to capture this scene.
Have you seen videos on like Instagram or TikTok of people who go to like a different country? I wish I could tell you where, but they go for like tourism reasons. Okay. And they like in one of their tours or restaurants or whatever, there's a person that they ask to film that works there. And that person like... is no that person is like super extra. They're like getting all the angles, they're doing like Windows Movie Maker transition effects but like with their hands. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you
that's
mean.
That's exactly what this scene looks like. It's like you have like,
yeah, it just like has the cube and it spins.
Yeah, the camera got really creative. But anyways, back to this like suspense. This room looks black and green, like it has the weirdest hue. Lighting is very dark. She grabs this knife and this scalpel, and she's ready to cut this man's stomach. There's a massive question mark on his stomach. She's ready to cut it when all of a sudden she sees that this man is
alive.
And here's the thing. He's not fighting or anything. His eyes are just open. Mm-hmm. So very clearly, he is like
sedated.
Somehow inhibited
from
like actually reacting to this. So what does she do? She ends up stabbing this man.
She goes and gets that key.
She got her key. She took off the bear mask. And I kid you not, probably like 0.1 seconds after she took it off, that thing snapped open. Yeah. She was so close to like...
I think what would actually happen like physically is just your head would go back, but then your bottom jaw would just be like sent off. Like, it wouldn't actually make your head explode. It would just, like, send up your bottom teeth gone.
My team J could never.
Yeah, your team J could resist it.
So, after she lives, she is crying.
Mm-hmm.
This part
celebrity
really got
sighting.
Me. This part, like, I almost cried when I saw this. Jigsaw, none other than the Jigsaw, enters the room in a tricycle. We need to acknowledge that we're in the presence of a king.
That's right.
We're in the presence of royalty.
Put some respect to the name.
And this theme of gratitude for living is like now being explicitly shared.
Yeah.
Where it's like the objective is that the person should feel grateful that they're alive.
It's like you're not valuing your life.
Exactly, exactly.
So I'm going to make you try and value your life.
And that kind of like when you listen to the other cassette tapes, it starts making sense because the whole premise of those cassette tapes were like, hey, this is what you're doing with your life and you're basically wasting away at doing that. So we learn that this victim, whose name is Amanda, is actually a drug addict and she says, he helped me. That was the line
that's
she
some,
said.
That's some, what's the...
Stockholm Syndrome?
Thank you, yes.
Yeah. She said he helped me, which was bananas to me. But anyways, they go into part 3 of the movie. They're back in the room. Adam starts to question the doctor.
Yeah.
How do I know you're telling the truth? Yes.
So whiny. It's just kidding.
I have something to say about Adam, but I'll say that later.
Dude, Adam's so annoying to me.
So, Adam questions the doctor.
Yeah.
They end up finding this camera. This doctor is so pretentious in everything he says, everything he does. He acts like he knows it all.
Oh my God. This was so annoying.
So they pan to this flashback of his daughter sleeping.
Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. We have to go back a little bit because Adam says the best line in this entire movie.
What is it?
He said, so it was after they're like talking, he's complaining, and he's like, this is the most fun I've had without lubricant.
just. You know what? I have a better saying that he said. We should just do like a
or Adam quote phrase. Of the week.
Adam's quote of the week. But yeah, yeah, so we flash back to his daughter sleeping, mm-hmm. and she gets up and she's like startled by
Dr.
something.
Dr. Gordon's daughter.
Yeah, fair. Yeah.
Adam cannot
Adam
procreate.
Adam is not a father. Clearly.
Yeah.
But she wakes up, I would be screaming. Because she very clearly saw something, I would be screaming. Yeah. If I was a child, you better believe I would be screaming, attacking, yelling, crying, yes. all the emotions. Mm-hmm. But this girl walks so damn slow.
Yeah.
She is like, she gets up from bed, she very clearly sees something, and she just like,
Just nonchalant.
Strolls yeah. into her parents' bedroom.
It's like, hey, when you guys aren't busy.
Yeah.
If you have a moment. I think there's a guy in my room.
No worries. No pressure.
Yeah, no worries if not.
You can.
She's the original people pleaser.
So they go into the room because she asked for her dad to check if there's any bad man there. Her mm-hmm. dad goes, and of course, Dr. Gordon, being the actual bad man in this situation,
yeah.
is like, no, there's no one here, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then there's this weird foot scene.
Yes!
That was totally unnecessary.
Ew. He's like, this little piggy goes to market. This
Dr. Gordon then starts, like, playing with his daughter's toes, yes. doing the this Which, little piggy went yeah. there.
And they're showing this child's foot.
Yes.
Disgusting.
Absolutely disgusting.
Why? 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 Who is that for?
It pans back to them, to Adam and Dr. Gordon in the room. And so, just as a recap, these have all been flashbacks. So, all of these different settings and plots
like,
have been happening before Dr. Gordon and Adam were in that white, nasty,
in the bathroom.
Weird bathroom yeah. thing.
Yeah, and like at various points too. But
yes.
this is after he got back from the station, I believe.
So, anyway, so we're back into this bathroom setting mm-hmm. with Adam and Dr. Gordon. And Dr. Gordon says, like, hey, do you want to see my children, my wife, whatever?
Kind of weird.
And he throws his wallet, which is so random. If I was trapped with this stranger, mm-hmm. my first thought when I saw this was like, I guess they're trying to build rapport. They're at that point where they're, like, so exhausted and
well
stressed
just,
out.
Yeah,
yeah you just yeah. want some kind of form of, yeah. like, normality.
This, to me, did feel like a weak way to move the plot forward. You know, they're like, they need Gordon to check his wallet, and they needed Adam to get something from his wallet.
For me, it kind of just felt like they were trying to escape their reality for a second.
Okay,
and
fair.
Just have, yeah. like, a normal mm-hmm. moment. He tosses his wallet towards Adam to see the photos, and Adam's looking through it, and he finds this Polaroid with the wife mm-hmm. and the daughter, with, like, very clearly having been kidnapped.
Bound and gagged.
Yes, having been kidnapped.
Mm-hmm. After, like, they also see, Adam finds that it says, X marks the spot. Sometimes you see more with the light, with your eyes shut.
Oh, that's so true.
So Adam knows this, and Gordon does not.
So Adam hides the Polaroid. He does not mention it to mm-hmm. Dr. Gordon.
Yeah.
And then we see a flashback to the scene where Diana and Allison actually get kidnapped, which is how this Polaroid comes about.
Yeah.
But basically, as they're showing this, this man kidnaps the two of them, and he ends up giving a bear to Diana and pats her head.
Diana, which, the child.
By the way, Diana is the child, which is like,
and
why?
Allison is the wife.
Exactly.
This is 2004. That kid was 6 years old. Our age, we'll say, born in 1998, who's, I know 20,000 Allisons in our age. I know, the only Dianas I know are 50 years old.
Like, give her a nickname. D, Anna, Nah, Deanna, I don't know. Give
Die.
Her, die. Give her a nickname. Diana, that's the name of an old lady.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this man pats her head, and who is it?
Zep.
So it is Zep, the janitor from the beginning that we said was creepy and was talking to the or interrupted Dr. Gordon during a
yeah.
conversation. So as this is happening, Zep goes to this curtain in the room, and we end up seeing that someone is looking at this.
Yeah.
And when they pan to see who that is, we actually see that this is a cop. One of the cops that was interrogating Dr. Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
So this cop, wife. He believes that Zepp is having an affair with Allison, Gordon's wife, and that the Dr. Gordon yes. kind of figured this out and is like a suspect. Like, this is basically the reason for like
yes.
being a suspect. Yeah. And he says, I should have never let you go. So he mm-hmm. very clearly is like set on the fact yeah. that Dr. Gordon is the one committing these crimes.
Mm-hmm.
This man is obsessed.
Yes.
His name, by the way, is Tap.
Yeah, Detective Tap.
Detective
Tap. Also noting...
Dick Tap.
Also notably...
I didn't know what that sounded like.
He is looking through blinds and in a room coated wall-to-wall with newspapers.
I'm telling you, he is obsessed.
Yes.
It's the stereotypical trope of the cop who wasn't able to, like, break this crime, and mm-hmm. so they have just been consumed.
It's only, yeah, I wonder if they actually work like that. I can't imagine so. It seems like it's not.
It's certainly not efficient. My brother. So no. He's zoned in. I understand the feeling of becoming, like, really obsessed with something.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I get it. So, I understand you, Tap. It flashes, I don't know if this
it goes
is flashing
back.
Forward or back.
No, it's back.
It's another flashback of a flashback
yeah.
of a flashback.
So, obviously, we're all following the timeline. We're not. This is pretty far back, but after a few murders.
I am stressed at having to communicate this timeline. I cannot. Let me do a little recap real quick. Dr. Gordon and Adam are in this room trapped, and they're having these 50 gajillion
that
flashbacks.
That is present.
That is present day. All of the flashbacks that we have mentioned mm-hmm. are flashbacks.
Yes. But not all of them are as far back as others.
No, and those flashbacks are essentially to show a couple of things. What are the crimes that are happening?
Mm-hmm.
Show that they were being pinned on Dr. Gordon.
Yeah.
Show that whoever actually was doing those crimes somehow targeted Dr. Gordon and mm-hmm. his wife.
Yeah.
And to also introduce Detective Tap and his, mm-hmm. like, total mission.
And
to
the,
do
like,
this.
The Jigsaw's motivation, seemingly.
Yeah. But that's, like, that's
the part
just,
of
like,
the
embedded
stuff.
In everything.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it flashes back from... Okay, wait. Tap is looking
yeah.
at Zepp.
This is basically, like, yeah, Tap... So in Gordon's flashback, Tap is looking at Zepp, and then from
and then
there,
Tap
has
a flashback.
Again, we think that Inception did crazy things with
this
a dream within a dream within a dream.
This is flashback Inception.
Yeah.
So Tap's flashback is him working at the station, and again, he's kind of like consumed at this. He's
yeah.
looking at this
it's
tape.
It's the full cop
and
trope. Of
another
that.
Man with supersonic hearing abilities, because he's looking at this tape and he hears
oh, yeah.
this like fire alarm from like two countries away from where he's located.
Yeah,
it does not make sense. And he sees his graffiti background, but mm-hmm. somehow
connects
he
his
was
old VHS.
Able to yeah, yeah, he was able to like make this connection to a specific place that they narrowed it down to.
Yeah.
So Detective Tap and Detective Singh go to investigate this. So Detective mm-hmm. Singh is kind of like
his
partner.
Yeah, yeah.
That worked with him.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why I was about to call him an understudy. It's a very funny concept.
It's like he's not able to come into work, so
you're filling in for Tap.
You're not even just like taking over their job. You're actually acting
as them.
Just like they would act. You're dressing just like them. You're looking just like
I love
them.
It.
So they go into this place, and let me just say, I would be too scared to actually, mm-hmm. like, enter any place. Yeah.
Well,
I
they
would
brought
not be able
us.
To do a detective, be a detective, FBI,
yeah,
whatever. I couldn't
not.
Do it.
That's okay.
I can do it.
We're
but
not
they brought guns.
And they brought a shotgun.
That was what I wrote here.
Seemed dramatic.
Singh has a huge shotgun, and Tap has a small handgun.
Yeah.
Those were their weapons of choice.
Mm-hmm.
And you know me. And my passion for choosing appropriate weapons in situations like
this. It really
this,
is your number one issue.
This was not the case. Like, you knew you were going to this place. You knew you didn't have backup. There was a huge chance that this crazy lunatic
yeah.
is, like, a part of this. And that's what you bring. Whatever. So, they start to clear the room. And I started to wonder, how does clearing a room actually work?
I mean, it was clear to me that these actors were not trained they're in
not,
the ways.
You mean to tell me they're not actually cops?
No, but like you watch Criminal Minds and it's clear like, okay, they, no, these actors have been then, trained how to like clear
even a then room. How do you, this is what I don't understand about clearing a room. So, you know, you're like walking, then you turn your back, and then you turn your back. But it's like, what if when you turn your back to check this side, someone from behind you attacks you?
Well, I think it's about eliminating sight lines where you're trying to see as much as you can with while exposing yourself to as little as you can. And they know how to do it. I don't know how to do it.
I don't know, because these people were just straight up walking in like the middle of the room.
Sometimes their guns were up, sometimes they were forward.
They're walking in the middle of the room and they would just like pivot. No, and they, that's all they would do.
I mean, they were doing what we would do if someone told us, clear the room like a cop would. I don't think they had actual like SWAT teams on site to give them training on how to clear that room.
So they find this cute diorama.
You're very cute, yeah.
Of the bathroom scene where Dr. Gordon and Adam are at. So literally it's like this. And you know what? In Heretic, the guy had a diorama too.
It's true.
So I don't know what it is about murderers having dioramas.
I think something about the serial killers having the planning is part of the fun.
I remember when I first met you, remember I had to make a diorama. Well, yeah. I didn't have to. I wanted to go above and beyond for my students, which... Big mistake for me.
Big mistake again. Yeah.
But I had to. I did a little diorama, and that was one of the hardest things I could do.
Mm-hmm. And you ruined Yessie's hot glue gun.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry, Yessie. But anyway, so as they're looking around the room, they find this diorama, and they find this man that's trapped underneath this long red
and
drape.
This man is awake.
He is awake, and he is in this contraption, like all the other freaking contraptions that have been set up, where there are, like, these two drills on the opposite side. Like, one on the left side of his face, one on the right side of his face.
You haven't had enough dental horror.
Exactly. This guy is obsessed with teeth, apparently. But they see this guy, and their decision is to just hide and observe what the murderer, Jigsaw, would do. So... they go, they kind of hide a little bit, they start to, like, see what's going on, and they jump out, and they're like, put your hands up in the air.
Yeah, because Jigsaw...
Wait, like, you just don't care.
Because Jigsaw comes.
Yeah.
Yes, but I don't know what he said. Yeah, but, like, pretty cool robe he was wearing.
Oh, absolutely. Kind of
cultish, but pretty cool.
It was, like, black velvet, like, the outside, but the inside was lined, like, a very pretty, like, ruby red type of thing. Very, like,
Yeah, but they're like, stick him up, you know. And
then, did they say that?
No, that seems like something they would say. So, I wouldn't put it past this movie to do.
So Jigsaw ends up, like, pressing a remote or something. Oh, he kicks a lever or something.
He starts the contraption.
Yeah, he starts the contraption. Victim. And so this contraption is, like, drilling in the inwards towards the man. Like, if it keeps going, it will literally just, like, drill into him and kill him.
Yeah, so the cops now have a dilemma. Yeah. Where it's like, okay, chase after Jigsaw or try and save the guy who's about to be killed by this thing.
What would you have done?
You save the guy. Yes! I'm sure all of you heard that face that Shayla made to me, where it was just really?
I would not try to save him. Think about it. This man is a serial killer. My priority is to stop him.
No.
Because if you don't stop him, think of all the other people that are going to die.
But if you don't save the person, they 100% die, whereas you found his lair and saw him. And are able to have this guy not die while also continuing your search. There's no way it's not worth it to save the person right in front of you. Like, it's not a trolley problem in that way.
Okay, I think this is a moral dilemma, though. In my opinion.
Dilemma for certain people.
But I think this is a trolley problem.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. You save one guy... and risk a bunch of other ones dying, or you let one die.
But it's not a trolley problem where it's either you divert it to save one person, and then you can try and run ahead of it and divert it again.
Okay. But I digress.
Yes, we digress.
We digress.
We divert.
So as this is happening, Tap gets distracted. So they have this dilemma, save the man or get captured Jigsaw.
Yeah.
So their decision is Sing is going to go and try to stop the contraption to save the man, and Tap is going to, like, handle Jigsaw.
Yeah.
So Tap goes and he has like Jigsaw on the floor and is like, put your, like, whatever, whatever, whatever. Yeah. Trying to like get him calm. Tap is trying to like free this man from this contraption and realizes, I mean, sorry, Sing is trying to free this man from this contraption and realizes like, I don't know what to do. So yeah. He decides to shoot each of the little sides that are about to drill into the man's face.
I'd probably do the same.
And it's a smart idea.
Yeah.
It's a pretty smart idea. But, of course, distractions end up being like something, the downfall of people in this movie.
Yeah.
Because as he does this, Tap gets distracted and turns to the side. And Jigsaw takes his opportunity to slice Tap's throat.
This was a full-on Assassin's Creed moment, for those that know. He had a switchblade in his robe with his hood up that he just, like, whips out super fast and slashes Tap's throat. Very, incredibly Assassin's Creed.
So Sing obviously sees this, and he goes after Jigsaw. Sing shoots Jigsaw, Jigsaw falls to the ground, and Jigsaw is about a couple of feet away from Sing, down in this weird hallway. Sing decides to walk towards Jigsaw, and as he's walking towards Jigsaw, he falls for this trap. He trips on this line that after he... Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well...
It's a good name.
He trips on a tripwire, which then sets off this gun that shoots him literally from above him. Like, yeah, gun
pointing down.
Yeah, which I can't even begin to imagine.
I mean, if there's a way to go.
I mean, I guess, yeah. I guess it's so fast you can't even, like, feel it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he gets shot from, like, the top of his head.
And Kablawi is blown up.
Yeah. So it turns out that Jigsaw actually was alive. I don't know if he had a bulletproof vest or something, but he was alive.
Or if he, like, yeah. Yeah. Who knows? He fell. He could have tricked him, but yeah, he's fine.
And so Sing is dead.
Big
very dead. Clearly. Tap comes out, and Tap is alive, and he sees Sing. And then it does this weird pause where it, like, the video pauses and it turns black and white and it, like, zooms out.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Do you remember this? It looked like a Law and Order I almost said SUV.
That's my favorite kind of car.
But anyways, so now we flash forward to present
time. Now we're back to the bathroom.
With this white... By the way, this... Bathroom has like the brightest LED lights.
Yeah.
Like, it's so bright. It's so contrast
to every other shot in this movie.
That is so true, because every other shot is super dark and black and green and whatever. But this shot, that is very true. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Adam asks Dr. Gordon to turn the lights off. And Dr. Gordon is like, why? And he's like, just do it.
I just had an idea.
Here's what I don't understand is, why don't you just explain it? Why don't you just explain, like, let's see.
Because he's trying to keep one up on him. But yeah, he's not smart. I also wrote at this point, because I think they said other annoying things, but it's like, what's the worst torture? Would you rather be in the room with these two or cut your ankle off?
I'd rather be in the room with them. I think I would vibe for real.
I can't. So, their personalities are like two ends of the spectrum of that I hate so much.
It's so funny because I still have to share something later. But anyway, so they end up finding this huge X once they turn the lights off, and the X is projected onto this wall in like some weird UV whatever color. Not important.
Like glow in the dark paint.
Yeah. But they end up breaking that part of the wall, only to find a box. And so this is on Dr. Gordon's side. So he's the one that ends up breaking the wall and grabbing the box. And what he finds in that box is a cell phone, a cigarette, and a letter that says that cigarette is poisonous if dipped into blood.
Yeah.
Then we go into another flashback telling the story of how the doctor actually got kidnapped. So he ends up like remembering what happened. And in this scene, basically, he's walking down this parking lot or whatever. Someone is in his car. They come out. They're in this weird pig mask. It's like a pig mask with like really dark black long hair. Yeah, they come crawling out and they end up attacking Dr. Gordon. And that's the last thing he remembers. So we move on to part three of the movie.
Sorry, I read what Adam says.
We move on to part three of the movie. Dr. Gordon starts to question Adam. He's like, how did you know to turn off the lights?
Instinct.
I cannot handle your Dr. Adam. I cannot handle your Adam impression.
I can't handle Adam being in my brain.
Anyway, so Adam then tells him, after Dr. Gordon continues to question him, Adam shows him the photo that he received of, or that was in the wallet of Dr. Gordon, of his wife and daughter. And I thought this scene was pretty sweet. I think we saw a little bit of empathy from Adam, because Dr. Gordon was like, why didn't you show me this? And Adam was like, I couldn't. I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like, when Dr. Gordon asked Adam why he didn't show the photo before, Adam actually showed some kind of empathy. He, like, he moved away from the trope of being, like, the funny guy to the guy who's like, oh, I just couldn't bring myself to show you that photo.
Okay, yes, that's a good point.
That probably could have stressed you the heck out.
Very, very redeeming of Adam there.
So anyways, Dr. Gordon realizes that he needs to dip the cigarette in the blood, and there is blood in the room, which is from, if you have forgotten, the dead man that's in the middle of the room. Because
I forgot that he was there.
Yeah, they don't even show him often.
He's just like a piece of furniture.
Yeah, he's just decor.
Yeah.
But there is a puddle of blood in this man's head, because it was apparently like hit or shot or whatever. So Dr. Gordon needs to dip the cigarette in that blood and give it to Adam, and that would basically kill Adam. So instead of doing this, they devise a plan in which they're gonna turn the lights off, talk about the plan, turn the lights back on, and Dr. Gordon is going to give Adam the cigarette.
Yes, because remember, they're being recorded on the camera.
Yes. So everything they do, they have to kind of, you know, they can't just like pretend or whatever.
Yeah.
This scene is so funny. Dr. Gordon gives Adam the cigarette and Adam pretends to die. This is the epitome of like, I don't even know how to explain it, because these two actors, I can't tell if they're good actors or bad actors, because in this scene, they are acting. They're acting so, like they're acting. Yes. You know?
And that's pretty impressive.
So.
Oh my God. Adam is like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll take the cigarette. And then does the smoke, and then it gives the absolute performance of his life.
He's like,
in this fake death. Straight up dancing.
Yeah. And so he pretends he dies, and he's on the floor. A few moments after this, Adam gets electrocuted. He gets shocked through his ankle thing.
And so, of course, he's like spazzing out, and then he says, ah.
And this is where I feel like everything just starts going down after this. So Adam begins to remember how he got there. Okay, stay with me here. We go into a flashback of Adam in this red room hanging photos in there,
like a photo developing.
So he's wearing like these head, or was it earbuds or something?
Earbuds, iPhone.
I don't know. But during this scene, I was like, I don't know. I'm kind of digging Adam. I generally was like,
Like early 2000s grunge, really.
I don't know what it was. Something about him and his personality, I was like, oh, okay. I can see it.
As in like an attraction?
Yeah. I was like, I can vibe with it.
What does that say about me?
I don't know, because you really are the antithesis of Adam.
Okay, okay.
But,
well, see, that's what I wanted to know. I don't care that you like him. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't like him.
But, like, here's the thing. Like, throughout the whole movie, they kind of made him to be, like, insufferable.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like the scene, something about him was, like, cool. He had, like, a cool vibe, a cool energy, a very, like, not caring type of energy. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of, like a carefree energy.
Yes.
He was just, like, walking, like, I don't know, just, like, owning it.
Good for him.
So I was like, oh, okay, I did that.
Good for you recognizing that.
But anyway, so as he's hanging his photos, we see that these are photos of Dr. Gordon.
Yeah.
And it is clear that he has become some kind of photo spy or whatever that's taking pictures to like, investigate him. So while this is happening, he hears a noise. He doesn't have a flashlight, lights don't turn on, and so he decides to use his camera flash as a flashlight.
Pretty cool horror setup. It's like, you get vision for a, like, tenth of a second every once in a while.
I didn't even think about that within the context of the movie. But I thought, yeah, that's cool. But anyway, so as he's doing this, he hears noises, whatever. He ends up getting kidnapped by the same exact pig that kidnapped Dr. Gordon.
He was holding the bat and the camera at the same time. Just like, what are you doing?
At that point, so it's just like, what do you... You have to pick one or the other. So we go back to present day in the dingy bathroom. And Dr. Gordon gets a call on that phone that was in the box. First of all, he takes forever to pick up the phone call. If I was in a room trapped and I knew I was going to die and I got a phone call, you better believe
I would be picking up
that call as soon as possible. He grabs the phone and he's just staring at it.
What do I do?
But anyways, he picks up the phone and it's his family. And Allie, his wife, asks him, is Adam there? And she tells Dr. Gordon that Adam knows him.
Yes. She says not to believe Adam's lies. He knows all about you.
Yeah. And so Dr. Gordon at this point is just like, this is starting to become like his demise.
Yeah.
Into insanity.
Yeah, because he's realizing his wife and daughter are actually
kidnapped.
Yeah.
So Adam, this one made me laugh. Adam goes, are they okay? Obviously not.
I wrote that too with like the inverted capitalization.
Are they okay? Obviously they're not okay. They're freaking kidnapped. Duh. So now the doctor questions Adam and he's like, why did she say you know me?
Oh, yeah. Hold on, wait. Oh, wait. No. Keep going. Sorry.
He's like, why did she say you know me? And Adam says that he's been following him and has noticed that he has an affair. So it flashes back to this brief affair where our suspicions were confirmed because he actually was having an affair with his student.
Very
Derek Shepherd. Not appropriate at all.
This was before Grey's Anatomy. The OG?
The OG Grey's Anatomy. This is what could have happened to Derek Shepherd.
This is what should have happened to Derek Shepherd.
But anyways, so they showed that he was actually having an affair with his student. And they met at this motel room where he basically like cut off the engagement and was like, this isn't going to work. Yeah. And this actually ended up happening. If you remember the scene where his daughter was like, there's a man in the room.
Yeah.
This was where he went after he told his daughter that there was no one there.
Because he got paged, is what he said, to work.
Yeah, he got paged by...
Paged to the motel.
By his mistress.
Yeah. But he does call it off.
He does call it off, yeah. Because his daughter was like, are you going to leave mommy and me?
The bar is the floor, but...
Exactly.
He calls it off.
As Adam is telling this situation, the doctor asks him, like, who hired you? And Adam is like, this man's name was Bob. I don't know. And as he begins to describe the person, we come to recognize that it's actually Detective Tapp that hired Adam.
At least Adam was not trying to just describe Detective Tapp based on race first. Oh. He's like, I don't know, I'm a normal guy.
Yeah, he described him based off a scar that he had on his neck. Which I think is descriptive. You can't just be like, yeah, it's a black man. Because it's like... Well then, who, that's like, hello.
A scar on his neck.
So many other people that
I could be. So I feel like Adam tries, since, you know.
Justice for Adam, you know.
Justice for Adam,
people look bad. I actually liked Adam. I liked Adam a lot. But anyway, so Dr. Gordon is like trying to prove that he did nothing wrong. And this was my favorite line that Adam said. He's like, I don't care if you covered yourself in peanut butter and had a 15 hooker gangbang.
I don't care if you covered yourself in peanut butter and a 50% gangbang. Oh, God.
That for me, that's I'm going to start quote telling people.
Yeah.
I'm going to start telling people that. But anyway, so we then... Now it's not a flashback. Now it's a change of setting where we switch present day to show where Allison and Diana are. And they're basically kidnapped. They're duct tape on their mouth, whatever the case is. So we have hit the climax of the movie.
Yeah. It's almost 6 p.m.
Which, by the way, there has been so much action throughout the movie, and this is the climax. Yes.
That, I think this movie is just so well paced, where it's just like boom, boom, boom.
Next yes, thing, next it's thing. One thing
it's
after
escalating,
the other.
Escalating, escalating. Yes, everything's building on each other. Yes. It's a pretty like limited scope of what's going on. It's very.
So it's 6 p.m. Zep grabs his gun and he's like, "That's it.
It's time.
Up.
Yep."
So he makes Allie, the wife, call Dr. Gordon and tell him that he failed.
Yeah.
And as she's doing this, she, boom, attacks Zep.
Because Zep, not a, like, master criminal by any means.
He's not. And he's, like, a pretty, like, average-sized man. Mm-hmm. Like, just, you know, he could totally be beat up.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the hardest thing to do. Yeah. But anyways, she begins to attack Zep. They're kind of fighting, whatever. She grabs his gun. And she's taking forever to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
She's just holding the gun there. And it's like, ma'am, are you bluffing? What are you doing?
You just gotta pull the trigger, literally.
You and your child's life is endangered. Mm-hmm. So I don't care. Shoot his leg. Shoot his arm.
Yeah.
Shoot his head if you want to.
Yep.
Do something.
Yep, yep, yep.
But you know what? The most frustrating thing in the entire movie happened. I know exactly what you're gonna say. And as Allison is holding the gun to Zeb, freaking Miss Diana, Anna.
Die.
She goes, Mommy!
Mommy!
And freaking Allison gets distracted. Zep, like, sees his moment, his opportunity, and he attacks Diana. Or he attacks Allison. Yeah. You see, I say Diana because Diana should be the mom's name.
Yes, yes. I don't know who in their right mind made that call.
So, anyway. I don't know if you noticed this, but then Allison runs to the drawer, to her underwear drawer, and grabs a pair of scissors.
What?
Yeah.
I did not catch that. Very weird.
I was like, what the heck?
Also, Allison, the mom.
The mom,
yes,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, as this
sounds
is
like something
going
you would
on...
Do.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm judging.
Yeah, but who are you to judge?
If you check my underwear drawer right now, there's actually a knife in there.
Yeah.
But no, so as this is going on, Detective Tapp is looking through his, like, telescope, binoculars, whatever they're called. Mm-hmm. And he sees that there's some kind of fight going on, so he grabs his gun.
He hears the gunfire, yeah, and sees it.
Yeah, that's right. So he grabs his gun and he runs in and he attacks Sepp. While this is happening, Diana and Allison decide to run. Tap's bullets run out, and so Zep starts to chase after Diana and Allison, and Tap follows.
Also, through all of this, Gordon is still on the phone.
Yeah, so Dr. Gordon is literally hearing this entire thing, and he then gets shocked, like electrocuted, shocked.
Yeah.
I think this really did it for him.
Mm-hmm.
It ends up briefly cutting into this driving scene where Zep is driving somewhere and Detective Tapp is following him. And this is literally like
2 seconds.
A car, a green screen, and just like a bunch of side-to-side motion.
Yeah. But and you
then,
know what?
That's and then like, just like moving the steering wheel side-to-side.
If you gotta keep the budget around $1.2 million, that's what you gotta do sometimes.
So it's just like this chasing scene.
Yeah.
We can tell that Zep is going to this place, which we're assuming is gonna be where Adam and Dr. Gordon are at. As Sepp is going to this place, Dr. Gordon, we start to see, like, he is having a straight-up meltdown.
Yeah.
He is hearing his family. I don't even know what he's picturing. He's probably picturing
he just thinks
them,
they're
like,
dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, of course, he's losing it.
He hit his limit.
Yeah.
His limit. And what does he do?
Lawrence finally is breaking down. Like, he's lost it. And he just screams, my family needs me. But he's like going crazy. And I honestly thought it was a pretty cool like trapped animal performance by the actor.
Yeah.
Like it was very believable.
He did an amazing job.
Yeah.
He literally looked like he was having a meltdown.
Yeah. It was insane. And then he's like gonna do it. I had to go. My family needs me. He grabs the saw. Wink, wink, wink. And starts to cut his foot off.
This is where I had that realization where I was like, oh my god, this is why the movie's called Saw.
I actually, me too.
I never had that realization before until I like was writing down my notes.
I think, yes, this, I honestly was just didn't put it together until now. But the other thing that was so cool about the scene is we don't see Gordon cut his foot off. We see Adam watch him do it.
Yeah.
And Adam's reaction is like makes it like not disgusting but like fun horror.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's not painful to see that happening. It's just like, "Oh god."
you get the idea and the, like, react to someone's reaction.
I also think another part of that could be they just don't have the budget to, like...
Yeah, they couldn't afford the prosthetic.
Make it look like he's actually cutting.
That's such a good point.
Which, there's another funny part that I'll mention in a second. Anyway, so he saws his foot off.
Yeah.
It pans to Tap fighting Zep. And during this fight, Zep actually ends up shooting Tap in the stomach and the chest. And Tap ends up dying.
Yep. Rest in peace.
So.
Friggin' Zep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the doctor, after having sawed his foot, goes to the gun that was...
It crawls to it.
crawls to the gun that was in the hands of the dead man in the middle of the room. Mm-hmm. And we start to question, like, will he kill Adam?
There's one bullet in this gun.
Yeah. He shoots Adam. At this point, this man is white in the face. And he's mm-hmm. blue.
He went from, like, purple to, like, ghast. Yeah. Because, I mean...
No. He went from white to blue to then purple.
Yes. You're right.
I was like, what's going on there? He's changing hues. Mm-hmm. Violet! You're turning violet!
And then after he shoots Adam...
Wait. I wanted to say something. Yeah. So, as he's on the floor... you can see one of the sides of his jeans is significantly longer than the other one because they're trying to cover his foot.
Oh, that's so very sweet.
That's how they, like, made it look like his ankle was cut off or his foot was cut off. They have, like, a longer jean.
See, I think it's stuff like that that we just, like, it has a charm to it, which I don't think it's, like, you can apply equally to all other movies. But there's just something about this movie being so fun, so loose with, like, what it's doing that it's just, like, I don't care. I didn't notice that. But it is very sweet. I like that.
It is. Mm-hmm. Zep comes into the room. Dr. Gordon is, like, bleeding out, apparently. Mm-hmm. And as Zep comes in to kill him, he tells him time is up. Adam actually ends up being alive, and he ends up killing Zep, like, overkill. Yeah. Like, overkill. Like,
it's Adam's turn to lose it a little bit.
Yeah, because Adam gets, like, what is it, like, a cylinder block or something?
He gets the toilet
cover. Oh, yeah, the toilet cover. Damn.
He uses that to bash Zep's head in, because Zep was facing Gordon. He's like, it's 6 p.m., I have to do this.
Yeah, so he's like, it's the rules, I gotta do it. Mm-hmm. So at this point, Adam overkills Zep.
Yeah.
And Dr. Gordon is purple. He is straight up purple.
Never has a man been more purple.
Never. I have never seen a purple, like, man like that.
He's
like,
a purple people. Yeah.
Purple people eater.
No, he's just the purple people. Jigsaw's a purple people eater.
He drags himself to Adam and he tells him that he has to go get help. And then this scene I thought was really sweet.
Aww.
And Adam is like, are we going to be okay?
Yeah.
And he's like, I wouldn't lie to you.
Hey, no, they're like, I wrote, imagine the trauma bond that they would have.
Yeah, I was like, part of me was like, oh my gosh, it's really sad.
Yeah.
I really grew to, at least with Adam, I really grew to, like, appreciate his character.
Yes.
Dr. Gordon, whatever, I don't care about him. But with Adam, I was like,
you know. Yeah.
You know.
I get that.
But anyway, so as Dr. Gordon is trying to, like, leave, he ends up crawling out of the room.
Army crawl out. Yeah.
Adam decides to look for a key in Zep's pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, he finds a recorder.
Yeah.
In this recorder, we learn that there's actually poison in Zep's system. And in order for Zep to save himself, he has to murder Diana and Allison.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't do that by 6 p.m., he will die.
So Zep was part of the game. He was also a victim.
He was a victim. As this is happening, you hear... Da-na-na,
da-na-na, hold on, wait. I'm going to give Shayla a call really quick.
Da-na-na, 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 da-na-na. So Adam is like, what the heck? Bum, I thought Zep was the murderer, bum, so why does he have this cassette tape?
Bum,
and in the background,
bum, bum, bum,
you see a body from the ground slowly get up in this, like, downward dog position. The body rips this, like, mass special makeup and, like, stretches. And we learn that this is actually the real Jigsaw. Not only is this the real Jigsaw,
but it's the original cancer patient.
Yes!
John, that Zepp was referring, defending to Dr. Gordon, who was presenting on him, who had the inoperable frontal lobe tumor.
Yes, yes, yes! The one patient that, like, was, like, brought up for, like, 5 seconds was actually Jigsaw. Like, the Jigsaw. And the thing that really got me is, like, how on earth did this man stay still for so long?
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, Academy Award winning acting right there.
It is, yeah. To not even, like, breathe or have a cough or anything.
And here's the other thing I noticed. Like, his foot was, like, positioned, like, standing upwards. I don't know how to explain it. But in a
way... It was,
way,
like, perched.
In a way that would be very hard for you to, like, leave your foot like that for hours.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so Adam goes to shoot Jigsaw, but Jigsaw actually shocks him. With the remote. And so we learned
that Jigsaw had the remote.
Yeah,
the whole time.
We learned that he was the one who was actually shocking them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the movie starts to end with Jigsaw walking out of the room.
He talks to Adam. Most people are so ungrateful to be alive, but not you. Not anymore.
Dramatic effect. He's walking towards the door. Walking towards the door. He says his like famous line or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then he slams the door closed and Adam's in is left darkness. In there screaming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Screaming. And then there's like no music.
Yeah.
It's just quiet. And your end credit scenes come.
Yes.
And that was that.
That was it. That's Saw.
That was our recap of Saw.
Yeah.
I love this movie so much.
It's just like, it's literally an all rise. All the way through the movie. There's no descending action, anything. It's all just like more and then more complexity and more complexity and more tension and more. And then it just like ends. You get the twist. The dead body has been the Jigsaw all along, but who's been orchestrating
in
this whole
room.
Thing. He's been right there. Oh, man. Very good. It's so good. Perfectly made. Well executed for what they had access to. Really, really just super enjoyable movie. And also not the most gross. Some gross things. And you can skip those.
I would say...
For a Saw movie.
For this Saw movie, it's not that gross. But I do think Saw movies progressively get like gorier and
yes,
gorier.
Absolutely they do.
They do. But for this one, I think it's more of like, they don't really show a lot of the gore, but they do describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And the gore, if they were to show what they describe, would be pretty bad.
Yes, agree. But they don't, because they couldn't afford it. So.
That's why the movies that follow it are just so much more gorier, because they probably had
so this,
higher budgets.
I read that this was released in... like June of 2004, and then like the next Saw got immediately made like right after that, like the next year.
That's crazy.
When they didn't really have a plan for it, but just it made so much money.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This was the Saw movies. The Saw 1.
That was really fun to talk about and like re-experience it.
Like I feel like I could go into so many details. Everything about this movie is so fun, from the way that they develop the characters and just like flesh them out.
That's something I didn't expect to get through this episode, but or like in talking about it, but you made a great case for Adam. I will admit
I love Adam.
He's
won me over. He's won me over.
He's too quippy.
But I really like the characters. I really like the plot twist. Like I said before, I would give anything to experience that plot twist again for the first time.
High up on, like, for me, all-time movies.
I wonder how many people actually guessed that twist when they watched it.
If you're thinking about it and you're pausing, you're like, what is the point of this dead body here? What are they? Why are they there? Why is it there other than to just be a threat? Like, who? That doesn't go with any of Jigsaw's MO.
Yeah.
Right?
But they don't know that.
But they don't. Well, yeah. Maybe Gordon might, because he knows.
True, because he knows more.
But, like, you know, from us as the viewer, it makes less and less sense for the body to be there.
Yeah.
Until, like, it happens.
Yeah.
Which is super cool.
But, yeah, that was our Saw recap. Again, I cannot say enough how much I like this movie.
We will definitely do Saw 2.
Yeah, eventually. Mm-hmm. After we do some of the movies. But we don't know what we're going to recap next week. But yeah, thank you for listening to our shenanigans, our life updates, our tangents about sweaty people and names that are not suitable for children and any other tangent we went on.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
We appreciate
it. It's very fun to do.
It is fun to do.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, thank you.
Yep, and until next time.
Till next time.
Cut your foot off to save your family.
Which one would you do?
I'd cut my foot off for you.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.